Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores the issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The writer Reina Grande has documented her traumatic journey to the U.S. as a child immigrant. Her first book, Across 100 Mountains, is a fictional work based on her immigrant journey. Her first memoir, The Distance Between Us, finally allowed her to be honest and open about the journey she made at 9 years old to the U.S. to live with an alcoholic, abusive father she barely knew and to try to reconnect with an indifferent mother. Her follow-up memoir, A Dream Called Home, continues her story of balancing success as a writer with her still uncomfortable relationship with her culture and her family. Reina Grande's newest essay collection is called Migrant Heart, Essays About Things I Can't Forget. It's Grande's reflection on her life with more mature eyes. This memoir, told in essays, sees Grande piecing the scattered pieces of her life together to find a place of healing. Grande calls it the rawest and most honest look into her life. The opening essay is called Queen of Misery. Grande says it sets the tone for the book, explaining her growing need to let go of the negative moments of her life and make space for the positive ones.
When I wrote The Distance Between Us, it captures a very sad childhood and adolescence. It deals with, you know, family separation, with my border crossing, growing up undocumented in California. And there were some very difficult things that my family went through. I wrote that book to capture that experience of what it's like to be a child left behind and also to be an undocumented youth in the United States. And when it was published, my friend read it and cried the whole time. And she says, "You're the queen of misery." But she meant it as a compliment. You know, she meant that I had transformed my childhood suffering into beautiful art, and my book had touched her deeply. But it stayed with me, right? Because I realized, like, yeah, like I have very, very vivid memories whenever they're sad, but I have trouble making space for the joy. And what I realized about myself was that my writing practice is tied to my trauma, because when I started writing at 13, I wrote because I was dealing with all these traumatic experiences. I felt it in my body at the time. I didn't know the words trauma. I didn't know the words PTSD or depression or anxiety or toxic stress, but that's exactly what I was feeling as a young girl. And I needed to find a way to, how we say in Spanish, desahogarme, right? To undrown. And writing did that for me. So then I began this writing practice of always putting on paper everything I was feeling, all the things I was going through. And then from there, what I realized about myself is that whenever I sit down to write, I'm poking at the wound. And that's where my writing comes from that profound anguish from my deepest wound, and I don't know how to write from any other place but that. So in the book, what I try to do was to then embark on this journey of teaching myself to reframe these memories and to find the silver lining, to find the joy, and not to create false memories, but to revisit them and update them so that when I think of them now, I can focus more on the positive of those experiences. And so Queen of Misery kind of sets the tone for that, for what the rest of the book is going to be like.
Well, I think that maybe what you're processing now and trying to find, you know, the good things that come out of the bad, I think that's something that can only be done with time and with reflection, and maybe in some instances with therapy. And you know, how long did it take for you to come to that realization that this is something that I can draw something positive out of this experience?
I think it took for me to get to my middle age years, you know, the wisdom that comes with aging. Because when I was younger, for example, when I wrote The Distance Between Us, I wrote it from a child's perspective. I was not ready for my adult voice. I wasn't ready yet for that kind of introspection that is needed. And I allowed my younger self to tell the story, also because I wanted to give her agency over her own narrative. Because as a young girl, I really had not a lot of control over my life, you know, especially as a child. I was at the mercy of what the adults around me decided. And so I didn't really have control over my life until I got older. And so in allowing my younger self to tell that story, It gave her more agency, gave her the ability to tell her story on her own terms. But also I wanted to write from the perspective when the trauma happened, not from the perspective of this adult woman that I am that has lived with this trauma for so many years. And I did the same thing with The Dream Called Home. I wrote it strictly from the point of view of myself when I was in my 20s, and just let her tell her story without the adult woman coming in and commenting on those experiences. And so with Migrant Heart, that's when I said, okay, I think I'm ready. I'm ready to let my adult self to finally speak, to look back at these moments and see what have they taught me. How have they shaped me into the woman, the wife, the writer that I am today?
Well, I thought it was interesting in hearing what you said right now, that you refer to yourself as a child and as a young woman, almost in the third person. Is there, you know, something within you that has now the separation of you today to the person that you were? Is that why you do that?
Yes, yes. And I think because in my writing, I need to separate them. Because otherwise, like I remember when I was writing The Distance Between Us, my adult self constantly wanted to butt in there and say something. and then I had to kind of push her away and say no. Because what I realized was that sometimes my adult self would come in with more anger, with more resentment. Because, you know, like I had more prejudice, I had more biases as an adult woman than when I was a child. And I really wanted that innocence of my child self to come through. And so, yes, I did. I had to separate myself and look at myself from a distance. And that has really helped me, you know, not just in my memoirs, but also in my fiction. My fiction, especially my first novel, Across 100 Mountains, was somewhat autobiographical. And that one is written in the third person. And it had to be that way because I was drawing so much from my experiences or sometimes not so much from my experiences of what happened, but the emotional truth. And I had to write it in third person because then when the writing was very emotionally difficult, I could say, no, no, that's happening to her, not to me. And that's what allowed me to write that first novel.
Reina Grande is an award-winning author, motivational speaker, and writing teacher. She's the author of the new collection of essays, Migrant Heart, Essays About Things I Can't Forget. When we come back, Reina Grande relives her trauma when discussing it with readers and audiences, but she finds a silver lining in how her memoirs have empowered other immigrants.
And so when I hear people engage like that with my work and realize how much it has impacted them, and then I know that what I'm doing is important, it's essential.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Sometimes the best path to take is the path of least resistance. Take that extra car of yours. You could sell it, but it's easier to donate it. With prices for used cars still strong, more support goes to TPR. Visit tpr.careasy.org or call 877-486-1227 to get started.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Writing, for author Reina Grande, is healing. It's a way to exorcise the demons of pain and trauma. But her success as a writer means she has to relive that trauma with book tours, readings, and interviews that take her away from her family for weeks at a time, interviews like the one she's doing with us. Retelling her trauma narrative traps Reina Grande in the past, but it's also a way for her to connect with readers who find their own bravery through her vulnerability. Grande talks about coming to terms with that difficult balance in her newest essay collection, Migrant Heart, Essays About Things I Can't Forget.
Writing for me was my therapy, and it was a safe space where I could unload all my sorrows and share my thoughts and everything that I was going through and really allow myself to be vulnerable on the page. But then, you know, once my work started getting published, it was no longer mine, right? Now it belonged to the readers. It was now a public pain. And I started traveling around the country and sharing my work with my readers and talking about all these difficult experiences I had written about. And then I realized that I was becoming fixated. The constant telling and retelling of these traumatic experiences can lead to preoccupation and fixation. And at some point, I asked myself, am I fixated with my trauma? You know, have I wrapped my whole identity around it in my personal life, but also my professional life? And then the constant retelling of the traumatic events and being very open on stage and on the page, I realized that it was starting to have the opposite effect, where instead of healing me, it was re-traumatizing me. And I was constantly living in this state of distress and vulnerability, because I am very transparent and very honest with readers, and I get asked very, very personal questions.
Well, you write very personal things.
Yes, yes. And so there was a point where I definitely was feeling the weight of that. At the same time, you know, what I acknowledge in the book is that because of that vulnerability and that honesty, then people feel very comfortable sharing with me the things that they go through. You know, I get a lot of emails of people sharing their struggles, sharing their own traumas, and telling me how reading my book, they felt seen. And so when I hear people engage like that with my work and realize how much it has impacted them, and then I know that what I'm doing is important, it's essential. But I also have to be more aware of the toll that it takes on me and try to do some self-care, you know. But I do want to keep doing it, because I feel that I have helped a lot of people heal from their experiences, or at least get on that path towards healing. And I think that's so important. You know, that's what stories do. That's what books do. And so I want to make sure that I do continue to actively work towards helping other people confront their own traumas and find a healthy way to heal from them.
And in this book, going back to, we were talking about, you know, finding sort of the positive things that have been going on, you have written about sort of breaking these intergenerational cycles, you know, of alcoholism that led to the death of your father, of violence, of poverty. Can you talk a little bit about how you came to those realizations with the experiences that you have had with your own family?
Yeah, the first cycle I broke was the lack of education, right? I come from a family that was very poor and didn't have opportunities to get much schooling. My grandfather, my maternal grandfather, was illiterate because he never went to school. He had to work his whole life. And then my father only went to the third grade. My mother went to the sixth grade. And so when I started junior high school, I had surpassed them in their education. And then, of course, the further along I went, all the way to university, it was a big responsibility, being the first person in my family to go to university. But I knew that I had to do it, that I had to break that cycle. And it was so scary and lonely because as I was going through college, there was no one to call at home and say, how do I do this? You know, give me advice. And so I had to figure it out on my own. But it was just such a beautiful thing when I walked across the stage and got my diploma. And I knew that now that I had broken the cycle, now it was possible for the next generation to accomplish that. And yeah, like, you know, thus far we've had three of my nieces have graduated from university. And then this fall, my daughter is going to start university as well. And I feel like there, you know, the cycle is broken. And so then when I became a mother, I thought, I want to break the cycle of abuse. My father grew up being abused by his parents, and then he became an abused child who then turned into an abusive parent himself. And my siblings and I grew up in a home that was just full of violence, you know, physical abuse, but also verbal abuse. And so when I became a mother, I was determined that it would end with me. But it was difficult. It was messy. As my little boy was growing up, I oftentimes didn't know how to handle his tantrums, how to handle misbehavior. And the first instinct was to hit him, you know, grab the chancla, right, and hit him. And then I would cry afterwards. And it was just this really horrible moment of figuring out, how am I going to work against the conditioning that I've had as a child? How do I work against the harm of chancla culture in our Latino community? How do I break this cycle? And so that's what that essay, Spare the Chancla and the Child, is about. It's about my journey of trying to be a better parent, of trying to end that cycle, of making sure that I did not pass that on to the next generation.
So you mentioned your daughter earlier. She's graduating from high school, and you write about her, how she's now taking the next step of herself becoming a writer. And so tell us a little bit more about her, because she was working on a novel when you were writing. Has it already been completed?
She is hoping to complete it this summer before nice. She goes off to university. 12th grade has really been difficult. You know? She's been working on it for several years, and I'm just so impressed with her, you know, that she can actually have that sort of commitment.
And that she has the bravery to ask her mother for advice.
When she first started asking me to give her feedback, I kind of overdid it. I forgot she was my teenage daughter, and I treated her like my MFA student, and I gave her a lot of feedback that when she got the manuscript back from me, she was really overwhelmed. But then, you know, she saw that a lot of the things I pointed out were very helpful. And so she started to do revisions. And she's on her fourth draft, you know. So she's been listening to me, that when I tell her that the real writing is in the rewriting. And that is what I want to teach her, that she needs to revise. And it's been such a joy that my daughter is a storyteller, because I grew up feeling very alone in my home. You know, nobody was a reader. Nobody was a writer. There were no books at all in my home when I was a young girl. And I felt so alone in my passion for reading and for writing. I had no one to share it with in my family. Whereas she's having the total opposite experience where, you know, she gets to share her love of storytelling with me, but also with my husband, who has an MFA in theater. And so she's able to talk about storytelling, about craft, and we can talk for hours on, you know, character development and scene structure and plot and pacing and all those things. And I love talking to her about those things because as a teenager, you know, she can kind of be a little aloof or just want to be alone in her room and push me away. But the minute I say, oh, so how's your novel going? Oh, then she talks and we can talk for a long time. And so I love that. I love how storytelling creates a bridge between me and her, between one generation to the other. And I am just so proud of her and her commitment. And I'm just so happy that her journey as a storyteller is completely different from mine.
Reina Grande is the author of the essay collection Migrant Heart, Essays About Things I Can't Forget. She's the author of the memoirs The Distance Between Us and A Dream Called Home. She's also written A Ballad of Love and Glory, historical fiction that tells the true story of the St. Patrick's Battalion of Irish soldiers that helped defend Mexico in the Mexican-American War. And Grande is the co-editor of the collection of immigrant essays, poems, and art, Somewhere We Are Human. Our conversation with Reina Grande will continue next week. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. The program is produced by Marian Navarro and Norma Martinez. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.
The largest sports tournament in the world is about to arrive in Texas, the 2026 FIFA World Cup.
Teams from across the globe are set to play at Dallas Stadium and Houston Stadium in June.
Whether you're a diehard fan or just a little soccer curious, we've got you covered.
When the World Comes to Texas is a new podcast from KERA News.
We'll talk to the people holding down the sport and the culture here in Texas.
It's out now. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.